The Brad Cessnat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Great Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We'll have Derek Hall on the show today. Derek Hall, Diamondback president and CEO. We are not going to talk much about what happened last night because the Diamondbacks were just awful, got crushed, and that happens. We'll talk about stuff going on around the team, the business side of baseball, and the first-round pick of the Diamondbacks, Matt McClain. That will be with Derek Hall. That comes up at 10:20. Clark Kellogg is going to be with us today, CBS College basketball analyst. You know, it's in just over two weeks before the Suns step to the podium with the first pick overall in the 2018 NBA draft. The Phoenix Suns select DeAndre Ayton. That is what is supposed to happen. That will be in a couple of weeks. We don't know that for sure with this franchise. We really don't. This franchise is celebrating the fact that they have the number one overall pick, which is silly and ridiculous and beyond belief. But these are this 2018 Phoenix Suns. So that's what they want to do, knock yourselves out. So we'll talk with Clark about the draft and players that are coming and going. What's going on in my mind in the world of sports? Brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most, guys. You've got to do it through life insurance. When was the last time you just sat and looked at your situation? It's pretty simple. You need to log on, and if something were to happen to you, would everybody be protected? Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. Get your free quote online. Do it right now at Sagicor Now. Derek Hall in about 10 minutes. So last night was a busy work night. I've got a couple stories that are really cool that have come my way. I was with Jeff Van Raphorst yesterday afternoon. We love Rapper. Jeff's son has been at Duke. He just finished as the runner-up in lacrosse. He was at Desert Vista. He's a first-team All-American. Spent some time with Jeff yesterday on that. Also, because Jeff is such a loyal Arizona State Sun Devil fan, we talked at great lengths for over an hour about recruiting and what he sees, what I see, the Herm Edwards experience so far, a lot with Jeff. And then I got buried in my office, just started writing some things, some cool little stories, a couple three dots that'll show up on the site here in the next couple of days. If you've not been to the site lately, you can check it all out at sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, those of you watching on AZ Central Sports. We are here every day doing our thing at 10 a.m. I watched some of the hockey game last night. By the time I got to it, it was out of control. Washington's going to win. And the Vegas night story, as big a fan as I've been of Vegas getting this far, this may be the best thing that has happened to the Knights to get beat around. And they're not going to win this series from all intents and purposes and looking at how it's played out. The Capitals win 6-2. Ovechkin was great. The Caps were terrific. It's a great environment in D.C. What you don't want is to have a franchise that in year number one thinks that this is so easy. And then when they go through the dark days, imagine being like the Coyotes, right? They never know what it's like to have success. And so when success happens after all this pain and suffering, the market is going to be even better. It will be even stronger. And I think that's going to be the case with Vegas. They've been through everything with Vegas strong, obviously. It hasn't been great. It hasn't been terrific for them. Away from the business side and on the ice, all the tragedy that's gone on around Las Vegas. So with all of that said, it's been a terrific story to this point. But for the Capitals and the fans of D.C. that have been long suffering, I think for them to have this success will mean more. If the Golden Knights next year are able to rally back and get all the way back to the Stanley Cup, it would be a terrific story again. But when you have success so soon and you think it's this easy in pro sports, I don't know if that's a good thing or not. Donald Trump is in the news cycle. The Philadelphia Eagles are saying, we didn't do anything here. We just decided not to go. And so Donald Trump decides to go after the Philadelphia Eagles, and he's going after the NFL again. It's interesting how this has played out because the Eagles claim that they've never had a player that has taken a knee. And yet Trump has said the White House is going to host a celebration of America rather than have the Philadelphia Eagles show up. Crossing over the president does this over and over. And when he decides to go into the sports realm, like when Golden State ends up winning the NBA championship, there's not a chance that Steve Kerr is going to show up at the White House. And is that disrespectful to the President of the United States? I would say it is, but it's also Steve Kerr's right to disrespect. It's his right to protest. This is not just the Philadelphia Eagles. Let's advance this. This is going to go further. This is not going to stop based on what we saw out of Golden State. And so for the president in June to lay this out on the Eagles, yeah, it's going to cause a buzz today. He's decided to go the route of I'm going to touch sports. I'm going to touch everything that is out there. There's nothing that is off limits, no matter what is a bigger deal in our country, a team showing up at the White House versus what is going on with our homeless or going on the housing or going on in infrastructure, all the things within our country. Yeah, I sit here, I do a sports show every day, but when I see that our president is weighing in and going after the Philadelphia Eagles, I'm just kind of like, really? You don't have better things to do. And the Eagles, it's more the NFL. I understand that. He's just picking out the team that won the Super Bowl and said, yeah, we're just not going to do this. And so he's getting the attention that he wants. The Eagles are going to be enraged. And then there'll be the Eagles that don't care. I've seen some quotes today. It's like, it's fine. There's going to be a base that will say, yeah, he can't get it right, who doesn't like what this president stands for. It's so polarizing, and now it drives over on the sports side of things. This isn't going to end. It's not going to stop with the Eagles. It'll go over to Golden State, and you'll hear the story again and again. And I just kind of look back and say, we have things that are more important than this. We really do. Like, we're in the entertainment business, the information business. You cross those two lines, you have to be able to inform, and you have to be able to entertain. When it comes to debating whether or not the president is right for going after the Eagles, this just is another headline grabber. This will take away from other stuff that is out there. Other stuff that is far more important than if a football team gets honored at the White House. Man. And the statement, I'll probably circle back on this a little bit later in the show. The statement that the White House put out on this basically is just going right after the Eagles when it's a bigger deal than that. It's more along the lines of the National Football League. We're going to have Clark Kellogg later in the show, and Clark is going to be on today about DeAndre Ayton and Marvin Bagley, and we'll break down the sides of the draft and the players that are at the top and all that stuff. I'm more interested, really, in the Suns' second first-round pick. So just so you guys know, we'll pull the curtain back a little bit. Every day the Suns send us a note, and it's who is going to be working out today that will be made available for the media. So they bring these players in, they put them on the practice court at the arena, media shows up with their cameras and their microphones, we're all led downstairs to the practice court, the players get done, we can shoot maybe 10 minutes of it, so we're really not showing you much other than guys running and shooting free throws, that's about it. And the general manager over visiting with somebody, and it's basically not a whole lot of news. But it keeps them out in front. I have yet to see a draft day here in the last week of, wow, we have to be there today because Mo Bamba is going to be made available. No, it's all this calculated stuff. You know, I think Trey Holder was available one day. Raleigh Alkins was available one day. Alonzo, those guys aren't going to be taken in the first round. They're not. So it's just the local stuff. When DeAndre Ayton or Marvin Bagley come work out, yeah, we're going to be there, but they're not going to be made public to us. Just so you know, if you want to hear from these guys, very doubtful, very, very doubtful the Suns are going to make them available. Derek Hall is next. We'll talk Diamondbacks. That's on the other side. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Our television show, Brad Sussmat, Football AZ, on tonight on Fox Sports Arizona. 16 airings a week. We appreciate the partnership with them. We have a couple of other partnerships that are going to be announcing here in the next few weeks that are going to be pretty cool. With that said, we turn our attention to the Diamondbacks and the state of the state from the president and CEO, Derek Hall. It's always good to have Derek on the show. How are you?
Doing well, Brad. How about you?
I would be doing a lot better if the lead were about six games.
We had our chance, didn't we? Yeah, we had that lead. We had a chance to put everybody behind us, but this division is unbelievable. It's tight right now.
But here's the thing on this. I'm kind of okay with where things are on June 5th. You know this whole deal, Derek. Memorial Day is a benchmark. 4th of July is a benchmark. Labor Day is a benchmark. You went through just a dreadful May, and you're still in first place by a game. I know last night was not good, but I'm pretty positive about where things are. Yeah, there's some holes that you look at and say, could this get fixed and that get fixed? But I'm not one of these guys that's really jumping off I-10 and breaking ankles on the Broadway curve, and I'm hearing a lot of that around town. What about you, where things are right now?
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think because we got off to such a good start, it may have played over our heads a little bit, but you have to have a lot of that as well. I think the April that we had gave us that padding so that we went through that, you know, dreadful, awful May, as you and I both know we went through. It certainly helped, and I agree, because the injuries we have now, every team's going to have injuries, and the Dodgers had a lot of them. The Giants have had their share of injuries as well, but we really have to lose Pollock, to lose Souza, to lose Ray. You know, hopefully Shelby comes back soon. All these guys are going to come back, and it's going to look like a completely different team, but we've never had all of them out on the field at the same time. So for us to get through that and get through these injuries and hopefully get a healthy lineup out there to still be where we are in contention, I think is good.
What's it going to take, do you think, to win this division in terms of wins? At the start of the year, I thought, you know, somebody's going to come out here with 90 wins. I'm not so sure that's the case now because everybody's beating up on each other.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, we thought this was going to be the toughest division in baseball, and we haven't played that way. We've had a lot of success against the division. We certainly did in April when the calendar was heavy with teams from the West. But, you know, we need to get back on track and beat the teams in our division. But I agree with you. I think, you know, maybe 85, 86 gets it done. You know, it was very competitive last year when you had three teams from the division making the postseason. It made you believe it was going to be similarly competitive this upcoming season that we're in right now.
Talking with Derek Hall. So I'm very, very pleased with where Buchholz has been so far. And lack of run support, I think, has hurt him. I keep hearing John Lackey's name. I know you guys aren't going to close the door on anything and you're going to continue to scour. That's how it works in this business. But it is fair to say, Derek, that the pitching, starting pitching with injury and some inconsistency now starting to show its head. Last night, Zach Godley got roughed up again. You got to start looking around on this, or is that the Shelby Miller card that is yet to be played from your view?
Well, I think it's the Robbie Ray card first. I mean, Brad, you know, he's going to be back very soon. He's going to throw another bullpen this weekend, and then he's probably going to go out for a rehab start. So we could see him within the next couple of weeks, which is great. I mean, arguably our best pitcher last year and such an important piece to us. But I agree with you. I mean, Buchholz has been tremendous. You know, you look at what that's been our strength. I mean, starting pitching has been our strength. Matt Cook has been dominant at times. He stumbled a little bit, and then he got right back on track, which was nice to see. Godley has had his bumps, but we need consistency there, and I think Shelby coming back is going to be nice, but I don't know that we can definitely rely on him or count on him yet. I don't think that's fair to him. A lot of guys, when they come back from Tommy John, they'll need a full season before they are even back to their form. You know, I mean, you look at some of the guys in our past, it takes a year or two. Corbin was not himself for another 2 years. But other guys do bounce back right away, and Shelby's looks really good in his rehab starts and, you know, in getting his work in at Salt River Fields with some of the summer league players and rookies. I mean, he's looked really strong, and his velocity is getting back up. So maybe he's one of the guys that'll bounce back quickly, but that's all going to help. And I think that's a boost in the arm for us to get Robbie and Shelby back.
And that would be July 1st thereabouts?
Yeah, we hope so. I mean, he's looked good. He's had two rehab starts, you know, one in Visalia, one in Jackson. You'd like to get another couple before he's back up here and get him around 90 to 100 pitches. And he's climbing there, you know, to go from 65 now to 75 and having no setbacks, knock on wood, he should be back pretty soon.
Okay, everybody's trying to figure out Paul Goldschmidt. And every talk show host, every columnist, every beat writer, everybody. I just sit over here and see at times a guy looks like he's going to try to hit a 10-run home run, which isn't going to happen. And then there's other times where it's, wow, his swing is really off. Derek, if you were just to sit here and take a deep breath on the Goldschmidt season to this point, what would you say about it?
Yeah, great question, and everybody is trying to figure it out. I think what's most important is, even though he's going through the roughest season he ever has, he hasn't changed. And that's the beautiful thing about Paul Goldschmidt. He's still preparing the same way. He's still got the same attitude. He doesn't take his bat out in the field with him. He's, you know, still a leader in that clubhouse, and he believes he's going to turn it around. And it's slowly but surely inching back up when you look at average and some of the production numbers. And I, you know, look at last night. I mean, he ripped the ball to left field. He always hits very well at at San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Maybe San Francisco and Coors will get him back on track. But I think he's going to be fine. At the end of the day, we know Paul Goldschmidt is Paul Goldschmidt. I think he put a lot of pressure on himself. He was out of whack. I've seen signs the last couple of weeks where he's hitting balls to right field, right center, mm-hmm. which is more of who he is. He hit that home run here, his second at Chase Field to right field, hugging the foul pole. That's a good sign. So I think we're going to see him snap out of it, and I think slowly but surely he is.
At some point, do you and Ken go to his locker and just sit with him and say, don't try to do so much?
Yeah, no, you know, we'll leave that up to the coaches and to the manager, and we just have to be supportive of him and all the other players, and don't change our approach. You know, I mean, I'm there for Goldie if he ever needs anything, and mm-hmm. when I see him around the cage or in the clubhouse, it's more friend and support, you know, than anything, and he doesn't need us going to him and talking about his game, and I don't think that's the type of player he is anyways. He doesn't really need anybody from the outside giving him a pep talk or any sort of rah-rah. He's a very smart guy. He's a very well-prepared guy, and he's going to pull himself out of it rather than relying on others.
The guy that you look at and you say, okay, he's coming around, and it may be Goldschmidt. You may go back to him, but it could be a pitcher. It could be a position player that he is giving you more than what you thought when the season started.
Well, I think two that jump out, obviously Daniel Descalzo has just mm-hmm. been phenomenal. And whenever he's up there with a game on the line or needing to get that big hit, he seems to. I mean, he's got the most damaging 250 average. You know, you think he's batting 400 with all the times he's come through. And the other is John Ryan Murphy. I mean, the kid has done everything you've asked, you know, behind the plate defensively, but also coming up with some big at-bats, especially when he's in the starting lineup.
Talking with Derek Hall, president of the Diamondbacks. So the draft was yesterday. Matt McClain comes on board. Your thoughts on that? What was it like in the war room? So on and so forth.
Well, we were lucky that he was still available. This is a kid who the entire war room agreed there was consensus on McClain. You know, you're always going to have hit and miss on others, and you'll have maybe half the room or 75% of the room, and we had it down to three guys that we wanted to pick, and we were hoping that McClain would be there. Very athletic high school shortstop. Very talented, can hit, he can field, you know, really does it all. So we'll see. We were excited that he was still there, and then of course we had our other two picks last night as well, and we're just about to pick here in the, you know, this morning to get the day started as well. But very excited that we got two high school players who are very athletic, one an outfielder, and of course McClain the infielder. And Thomas was somebody that we were hoping would be available at 63 as well. We were shocked that McCarthy was available with our 39th pick. You know, McCarthy is a guy that Pavin Smith, our number one pick from University of Virginia a few years back, knows very well. They played together, and he's a guy that's got, you know, just good pop and another athlete. We went out there and got athletes.
Diamondbacks are at San Francisco tonight. Corbin is on the mound against Bumgarner. That's a good matchup. Then tomorrow afternoon, they are home a week from yesterday, next week, for a seven-game homestand, three with the Pirates, four with the Mets. Not that I'm looking ahead, but you have the Angels for two in L.A. You don't know if Otani's throwing in either one of those games yet. Have you even thought that far ahead? You probably haven't, but
yeah, not yet. We don't know, but you know the schedule. It seems like it eases up. You know, we certainly had to take care of business during our last homestand, and we did, and we easily could have won every one of the games. We lost one, but looking ahead, like you just mentioned, I mean, Brad, it gets tough again. You know, the Pirates are having a great season. The Mets took care of us when we were there, so hopefully we can make up for our misgivings there at Citi Field. And then, as you mentioned, it gets tough again with the Angels. So we've got to continue to be consistent and get back to the way we played in April, or at least close to it.
Okay, the stadium. You had a leak the other night. Well, I was not in town. I only read a little bit. What happened?
Yeah, no, it was a bad one. You know, we've had a lot of that the last couple of years, and our facilities crew is phenomenal. They put a stop to it quickly, and we moved people around. That's what we're encountering. I mean, when a stadium is 20 years old, really anywhere, you're going to have a lot of problems. But I think what we found here is, you know, in this environment, this climate, you know, it wears and tears even quicker. But, you know, we're going to do everything we can, like we always have, to make sure it looks phenomenal when we open the gates each and every day. And that's mm-hmm. what we've done for years as the maintenance manager. But now we've got the entire thing. So after the ruling, this is it's our stadium now. And we're going to make sure we can do everything we can capital-wise to make sure that the building is invested in and that it is very safe and hospitable for our fans each and every game.
All right. Events inside there. Are you're in control of that now as well, right? 100%.
We are. So, yeah, we are. And so we've never been the booking manager in the past. That could help us. And we've always thought that we should be, because it's another source of revenue that we can then pump right back into the building.
Okay, and so down that path, I know it's only been a couple of weeks. I'm hearing Rising is shopping around, looking for a place in the interim. Why they build? Would you have soccer in there as a possibility?
Yeah, I haven't gone there. I mean, obviously, we've had a lot of conversations over the last couple of years of possibilities, and I think we've seen that, you know, work elsewhere. I know the Yankees have soccer at their ballpark, and you could have a lot of facilities that could host a lot of events and or teams. So it's something we could look at, but you know, it's so soon in the process. I mean, we were just given the right to see what opportunities are out mm-hmm. there, and obviously, one of them is going to be Chase Field. You know, we're going to have to do a full assessment here to see if it makes sense to retro this place and renovate it here and stay here, but it's going to be fun to look around and see what we can do differently for our fans.
I'm not looking for a comment on you on this, but I'm willing to bet someday you and I are going to have a ham sandwich somewhere around the 101, 202, looking out over the field. That's I've said that for the last couple of years, and it's look, the Monday through Thursday crowd from the Southeast Valley is only going to continue to grow, and those people need to come back downtown to watch ball games during the weeknights, and they're not doing it from what I'm hearing and seeing. And that's got to be hard from the business side to get people to come back to the back downtown. Things have changed, Derek, in terms of the population. You know this. I think that's a battle you're facing right now.
It has, but, you know, the beauty of downtown is it continues to grow. You know, our owner, Ken Kendrick, who you know very well, mm-hmm. I mean, he's invested as much as anybody in downtown and with public transit, with, you know, light rail going right to the front of our ballpark. There's a lot of benefits, but we're going to look at everything. And obviously, we're going to look heat map-wise where all of our fans are, where all of our season ticket holders are. But we also want to make sure we serve the entire valley because there are so many large pockets of population growth and young families. I mean, it's exciting the way this market continues to grow. So I think they're going to support, you know, teams wherever they are, but we have to be very smart if we were to move. But again, you know, just getting started, we've got to see what it looks like, what opportunities are out right there, or, again, if it makes sense to start here to renovate this place. But I would say, Brad, anywhere we are, I look forward to having a sandwich with you.
Yeah, no, that'd be good. That'd be good. Yeah. We'll have one soon. Stay well. Thanks
Absolutely.
For the time, as always.
You got it. Thank you, as always.
Take care. There's Derek Hall, president of the Diamondbacks. Look, he's not going to come on here and say we're moving, but all you have to do is just see where they are. They should consider, and I think the 101, 202 is where they should be. I really do. That's not just me throwing a dart at the board and saying, well, this is where they got to go. Clark Kellogg's in about 15 minutes. On the other side, Dwight Clark passed away, and the catch is something that we all remember. This is also a big week in sports on the racetrack. I'll explain that. And another football league trying to make an impact, all straight ahead. Pretty cool story that just happened while I was talking to Derek Hall. Jake Wong over at Grand Canyon University. We had Jake on a couple of weeks back. Was picked by the Giants today in the third round of the draft. That's the highest pick by a Grand Canyon player since Tim Salmon back in 1989. And Salmon went 69th overall. Jake Wong was Arizona's first collegiate player selected in this year's draft. No player from ASU or U of A was selected before Jake Wong. So what a great accomplishment for GCU and for Jake Wong. Of course, Jake went to Hamilton High School and earned second-team All-WAC honors this last season. So congratulations. That's a great story, great local story here in town. I saw the story last night about Dwight Clark passing away. Dwight Clark lost his battle with ALS. And those of you that are of the age of about 40 and above would remember Dwight Clark for a play known as the catch. The catch was one of the all-time great plays in the back of the end zone. Joe Montana trying to buy time. Throws the ball to Dwight Clark, caught, touchdown. I think it was the great Jack Buck who had the play-by-play call on it. And Dwight Clark was just a heck of a player and fun to watch, but ALS took him at 61 years of age. And sad story there on the pro football front with Dwight Clark. The XFL. So we have this spring league that will be next year that Rick Neuheisel is going to coach, the Football Alliance team that will play over at Sun Devil Stadium in February. We have the XFL that is now starting to come into play. Oliver Luck, I think we had Oliver on the show a few years back when Andrew Luck was about to be drafted. It's his father. And he was also a great West Virginia Mountaineer. He's been part of the NCAA. Oliver Luck ended up leaving to become the commissioner. He ended up leaving the NCAA today to become the commissioner of the XFL. The XFL is trying to make their way through. They think they can do it with marketing. While football has been under siege, and there's plenty of reasons for football to be under siege. There really is. Former players and how they're treated and the concussion stuff. The way that the anthem has been handled, just this whole issue, why is it every other sport can figure it out, but the NFL cannot? The arrogance around the league, people that work within the league that are just the most pompous, we've got it all figured out and you don't. And you're starting to see fans say, I don't want to watch or consume this any longer. This is the professional level. I don't think college football has been impacted that much. College football is as good as ever. Eric and I have had this discussion. You would not choose an NFL game over a college game, right?
No.
If I offered you four front row seats to TCU against Texas, because you're a TCU frog, but even if it was Notre Dame, Michigan, who they're going to be back playing each other this year, which is great.
Yeah, that is great. Yeah, like you said, Brad, you're either a Sunday guy or a Saturday guy. And I've always been a Saturday guy. And I like the NFL. I just like college more.
I'm becoming more of a Saturday, Friday, Sunday guy.
Mm.
I'm becoming more, and maybe it's because I'm in that space in life where I have kids and they have their friends. And when I see my kids' friends and they come over to our house, we're an open house, so we'll have kids come over all the time. Our place is trash. That's just the way it is. But when they play on a Friday night, to me, that's more exhilarating than going out and sitting in a hermetically sealed press box and watching Larry Fitzgerald, who's one of the greatest of all time, not bagging on Fitz. I don't find as much enjoyment in that.
You're going to get the purest football, I think, on Friday nights.
Yeah, you know, even Fridays is starting to change somewhat. There's more and more kids that are just shopping around for a chance to play.
Sure.
Rather than, I'm going to be the neighbor kid. Like, you go to Centennial a lot. And there'll be people that will say, well, there's Mountain Ridge kids that should be going to that are going to Centennial that shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's Ironwood Ridge kids. Well, guess what? Let me fill you in on something.
Ironwood. I mean, that'd be a long commute from Tucson.
Tucson. Ironwood.
Ironwood.
Just Ironwood. Thanks for correcting me.
Sure.
But the idea that they should go to those schools rather than a football factory. But on top of that, Centennial academically does a great job. Not to say Mountain Ridge doesn't do a great job or Ironwood doesn't do a great job.
Well, even Peoria High School, Brad, who has had a long string of success when it comes to Valley football, I mean, they're a distant second or third fiddle to Centennial.
And so kids on Friday nights, you go out and you watch them play. On Saturday nights or Saturdays, it just feels right to be out at a stadium.
It does.
On Sundays, it feels more... Maybe it's just in Arizona because it's a hermetically sealed dome that very seldom is opened all the way up. Very seldom. Sometimes it is. And it's tied into a league of people that just feel like we're going to squeeze every last dollar out of you rather than we want you to come here and enjoy this first and foremost. The business side just seems a little heavy to me on the NFL. There's not people in the Cardinals that I look at it and say, I don't like this person. It's just there's an air around the NFL of you should just be lucky to even be in our presence. And that should never, ever, ever, ever be the case. It just shouldn't. And so, you know, these leagues that are coming along, I don't know if the Football Alliance is going to make it. We had Mike Martz on last summer when Kurt Warner was going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And Mike was great. And I saw where Mike was hired as the Football Alliance coach over in San Diego. Maybe that's where Kurt Warner was hinting around of, maybe I should come back and play. I don't know. I think having Rick Neuheisel here in Phoenix is going to be a lot of fun. Rick is great on the air. Rick is a good name here in the Valley, well-respected, well-known. I don't think that the Football Alliance is Rick's final resting spot in terms of his coaching career. He's going to come back into it. And it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him have success and then go do some other things in coaching. Will the XFL make it? Will the Alliance in Sun Devil Stadium draw 10,000, 20,000? Is it going to be sustainable? Will we be paying attention to it every week in our sports market? You just look at our sports market. I had the president of the baseball team on. They're scuffling to get fans from the Southeast Valley all the time. So are fans going to come down to see this new league that shows up? was at a business thing yesterday, and a bunch of guys there, former NFL players, former college players, some of them for Frank Kush, and they're trying to find a way to get to Rick because they want to apply for a job and to Mike Martz over in San Diego. Well, it's just an interesting time on the football front because there's so much of it that's going on. It's also a week where the Triple Crown is in play. In our country, when the Triple Crown is in play, there is a moment to stop. Like this Saturday, I don't know where I'm going to be Saturday afternoon as of yet. I think I'm water polo dad. I think I'm at a pool for a zones this weekend. Justify is going for the Triple Crown. I've got to try to find a way to get over to see Justify somewhere. I'm not going to look at it on Twitter. But I'm looking to this Saturday already and even thinking, maybe I should call a friend, put down some money for me, and let's get after it and have some fun. Clark Kellogg is next on The Draft, on the Suns, on DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley, and more. Stay with us. It's always good to have a segment to talk with Clark Kellogg, Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, our television show on Fox Sports Arizona tonight, before and after the Diamondbacks. Here's the thing, though. I don't really want to have Clark Kellogg on the show ever again talking about the Phoenix Suns having the number one overall pick, because that means we've had to go through another year, or in this case, Clark, 8 years of no playoffs, or what they say is not tanking games, but it's tanking games and all that stuff. So no offense. I'd much rather have you on, as we've done through the years, on all the good stuff rather than where things are right now. So.
Well, there's two sides to that coin. You're right, though. I think if you're a Suns fan, you'd like to not be in the position that you're in. But hopefully they'll capitalize and end up on the good side of this number one pick.
It's the old adage of you've got to get really bad to get really good, right? I mean, that's what it's come down to.
Yeah, that's part of it. That's kind of the way the system is set up, unless you have some extenuating circumstances. But typically, to do it from a place of not being a playoff team, you typically have to do it through the draft, and the higher you pick, the better your chances are for getting a player that can get you playoff bound in a hurry.
So 2 years ago, we're talking about Clark Kellogg. 2 years ago, Clark, we had both DeAndre Ayton and Marvin Bagley here in Phoenix. DeAndre was at a prep school, and Marvin was over at a local high school, and now here they are, 1 and 2, and the Suns have the number one pick. Can you parse those two out as to what you see and what the better fit may be? I know you're tied with the Pacers, so you got to walk a delicate line on this. I get that. But from a CBS analyst standpoint, take those two and look at those two and what makes sense.
Well, Pacers are certainly part of my history, but I'm no longer employed by the team after a 32-year run. So I'm fairly neutral and objective. My heart is still blue and gold in addition to scarlet and gray. But when you look at those two guys, Brad, DeAndre Ayton and Marvin Bagley, I wouldn't mind having either one of them, but if I was choosing, I like DeAndre Ayton. He's a remarkable athlete for a guy of his size, and he's got a pretty good skill level too. Nice touch, can step out and shoot it. He's an excellent rebounder and a rim protector. His agility for a guy of his size is really something unlike anything I've seen in a long time for a true seven-footer. Bagley is fantastic in terms of his quickness, his rebounding, his ability. He's got a great motor. But I just think when you look at Ayton, he's got a little more of a refined game and position. I think Ayton is a true five that's got unique skill and also the ability to be an outstanding defensive player. I think Bagley is a work in progress defensively, but on the glass and in the open court, I think he's a guy that can bring a lot of value. But Ayton would be my first pick amongst those two.
Dr. Clark Kellogg, CBS Sports college basketball analyst. It's interesting as we get closer to the draft, and this is the way it works in most drafts, people want to find reasons to not take somebody, pick them apart. I kind of roll my eyes off all that stuff. in the Ayton case, it's, well, he played alongside Dusan Ristić, so he had somebody there alongside of him to help him who was more experienced. Thus, he really didn't show what he could do defensively, and they hit his liabilities there. I don't know if that's the case or not. I don't know how many games you saw him play this year, Clark, but that's what I'm hearing on Ayton. Is there anything to that?
I don't necessarily think so. And again, you can see what you want to see, beauty or lack of beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. And obviously when you're starting to analyze potential top draft picks, you tend to want to try to look at the negative side in terms of what the bottom might be. But I tend to always accentuate what you're getting. And, again, uniquely gifted athletically, really good agility and mobility, moving up and down and side to side. Outstanding rebounder and shot blocker, and a pretty polished offensive package for a one-year guy in college. And I just don't think those kinds of guys come around that much. He's mm-hmm. mobile enough to be an outstanding five-man, even in today's game. Bagley, too, has great potential as a mobile big guy. He scores it. He rebounds it. Not sure if he's quite the defender potentially that Ayton is. Again, you're splitting hairs. If you defaulted to one or the other, I think you'd still be pretty happy in terms of what you're getting. And they both seem to be pretty high-quality young men, which you always need to factor in, level of character, commitment to working to get better. Those things sometimes you don't know fully until you have guys mm-hmm. under your thumb. But they both seem to have the kind of ingredients that would lend themselves to succeeding and improving and working to maximize their potential.
A lot of fans ask this question. I don't like asking this question, but if I don't ask this question, fans get mad at me, so I'll ask the question. Does he remind you of anybody? Does Ayton remind you of anybody that you've seen in the NBA? We've heard a lot of Tim Duncan out there from fans, and that's mm-hmm. that's all well and good, but what about you,
yeah,
Clark?
Yeah, I haven't gone that direction in terms of comparing, and I'm like you, Brad. I tend to refrain from trying to compare. I know it helps optically when you can say this player reminds you of that player. Mm-hmm. But I think, too, sometimes it can be a little bit of an unfair consequence when you do that to the incoming player. So there's nobody that I've thought about that he reminds me of. I've just really enjoyed his uniqueness as a big guy. As a matter of fact, when I first saw him practice back in October, I couldn't believe he was 7 feet tall because of how well proportioned he is and how well he moves in terms of DeAndre Ayton. I mean, it was just mind-boggling that this guy could be so graceful and be a legitimate 7'7", 1 and probably 250 pounds or so. And then he's got a legitimate touch as a shooter, moves well and defensive slides and managing and handling quicker guys. He's going to have to work to get better at that, but he's got some really unique physical gifts in addition to basketball skills that I think just make him a hard guy to pass on as the number one pick.
There are people that will say the name Greg Oden, and uh-huh. and they are holding their breaths that DeAndre Ayton is not the next Greg Oden. I don't for me to sit here and say, yes, he could be, I suppose anything's possible with injury and all that stuff. You remember when Oden came out, Clark, and I don't see anything here in Ayton, but you may see it a little differently, or you're right along lines with me. Take me back to when Oden came out and what you remember, and do you see anything in Ayton?
Well, first of all, you've got to factor in the injuries or what sidetracked Greg. I mean, that's something that you can't really predict. That's really unfortunate for him. But going back to that draft, I don't remember the other players. I know Kevin Durant was part of that draft, mm-hmm. obviously, and then I'd have to go back and look at some of the other guys and where they were being considered. But again, when you think about a big guy that moves well, blocks shots, rebounds, runs the floor, and adding him to your team, you're feeling, you know, you look at the potential of what that can mean for you. And I had no problem with Greg being considered the top pick. Durant, again, would have been a nice number one pick, too. But when you've got two, you've got to look at your team and what you have and what you think you need and where the best fit is. And so Greg, unfortunately, never got a chance to realize his potential because it was sabotaged by injuries. So to make a comparison with Ayton, I think is totally off base and unfair because there's no indication that well, Greg had the wrist injury coming into the draft, but there was no indication from what I knew that he was going to have significant knee trouble. And it may have just happened during the course of his short pro career. So I think that's a little bit unfair to connect those dots with Ayton and Oden.
As I've said on the air many times, like, the draft cannot get here quick enough, because it's like we got to find a way to talk ourselves out of taking DeAndre Ayton. And what if, Brad? What if he ends up being a 20-10 guy? I don't know.
Well, one of the things about the draft is it's far more art than science. We do know that from decades of watching it. There are always going to be surprises. There's some guys that are going to play above their draft position. Others are going to play below it. You hope you end up in the right spot based on where you draft with the player you get, that he is what you expect him to be. But there are no guarantees, and there are a lot of variables that go into determining what a draft choice becomes as an NBA player.
Good stuff as always, Clark. I appreciate your time, and look forward to visiting with you down the road on the college front. Thanks.
Yeah, and I look forward to you being able to have the draft behind you before too long, so you can move on to actually talking about some other stuff.
You got it, Clark. See you later. Thanks, man.
All right, take care. Yep, bye-bye.
Good stuff. Clark Kellogg there. Clark's one of the really good people, and as always able to come on the show, which we appreciate. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. There are days that we do this show where behind the scenes, it's total chaos. Today was one of those days. It's fine. It's part of doing this every day. I love that. Eric Sorensen is our senior executive vice president of everything. There are days where there's total chaos going on behind the scenes, and this is one of those, and that's why I love Eric so much. And our intern staff as well. Thanks to all of you for watching. We'll see you tomorrow.